If you ever feel like you're invisible or you dim your light, this one is for you. We're talking about how to stop hiding and show up with sparkle. This one's called From Invisible to Invincible. Welcome to the boardroom. We've all got this invincible woman inside us, and we just need to find a way of unlocking her without, I think, for most of us, feeling like when we do that, we're a horrible show up.
Yeah, I think that's always the fear, isn't it? I think, yeah, showing up and showing off are kind of our biggest fears. And actually, they're the things that they feel like it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? To show
Yeah.
up and then feel like maybe you're just overdoing it.
I know, and it's literally taken me until I've got to 50 to, I guess, sparkle. Also, in the sense that I always wanted to wear sequins, right? Always wanted to wear sequins. Never been brave enough to wear sequins, but Christmas just gone. I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to wear sequins, and I'm not going to feel like, you know, I'm showing off, and I'm going to enjoy it. And I think there's loads of different ways that as women we can unlock that real woman that we know is in within us. Because I think we all have her within us, and you know, it's almost like your brain does this little like chit chat. You know, she's in there, and there is that confident, sassy woman in there.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know what you were saying about, you know, showing up. But without showing off, standing out and speaking up without feeling like you show off, can be really, really hard to do. I think mostly for me, there's a really big thing around this, and I like to think of it as it's how you quieten that inner chit chat that we have. That actually, I think there's something quite interesting. And I think you've got some stories to share on this, that in some aspects of your life, you can feel incredibly sassy, confident, but in other aspects, the absolute opposite is true. And I know that's something that you've found a challenge, haven't you? Like you can really show
Yeah.
up in like things that most people would find really scary, stand on stage and speak to like so
Yeah.
many people.
Yeah. And it's always been really odd because because I do, and again, it's that thing where you sort of put yourself down, like, jokingly. But I, as we know, our brain doesn't know any different. Like when we're cruel about ourselves, even if we do it in a jokey way, actually our brain doesn't know any different. It just sees it as being cruel. And I would naturally kind of like laugh it off and go, well, I'm a bit of a natural show off, and put myself down about it to sort of cope with the fact that you're right. I mean, isn't it only something like 3% of the population are not afraid of public speaking? That's globally, it's some bonkers statistic like that 90 something percent of the world are frightened of public speaking. And I'm not saying I don't get nervous, but absolutely, right from being a young age, give me a stage, give me an audience. I'm out there, I'm waving my pom-poms and doing all of that, and I enjoy it. I do enjoy it. I mean, I did, the first degree that I did was English and Creative Studies. So I did like a bit of, drama and theatre and stuff like that. But even just, public speaking and things. But you're right, in my private life, I mean, even to a joke, I mean, back when I was married and living with my ex-husband, like he used to joke that if the doorbell rang, I'd be the last one of us to go and answer it. I didn't want to answer the door. Didn't really want to answer the phone, would completely hide in that aspect of my life. Oh, I don't want to speak to a stranger, or I don't want to pick up the phone if I don't know who that is, or and I really used to hide. Absolutely.
Yeah, and interesting, just picking up on that statistic you quoted around fear of public speaking and presenting. Actually, not one of us has a fear of presenting in public. What it really comes down to is a fear of something else. So it's that fear of, oh, well, what if I forget my words and then I feel really embarrassed or ashamed or humiliated. There's always some other underlying cause around that. So
it's always fear.
Yeah, it's always to do with fear. And this is the thing that, for me, everything boils down to, what am I afraid of? Work on that kind of inner fear. And there's loads of different ways that you can do that. You might say, oh, okay, that sounds, easier said than done. But one of the things I like to do around that, it always comes back to, I've talked about it on every episode, but I'm massively passionate about it, what we believe to be the truth. Because beliefs are just concepts and ideas that we hold to be true in our mind, whether they're true or not. If we are choosing to hold them in our mind, our brain's going to believe them.
Right?
So if, and sometimes we're not conscious of those things we believe about ourselves. And maybe it's because, again, we heard all this stuff when we're growing up, or there was somebody influential in our life that maybe said something like, that's not good enough. That's not good enough. But what you might have heard was, you're not good enough.
Yeah.
In that moment, you created the I'm not good enough story in your brain and your body that you then use to keep you safe. Or you might have things that you say. This is why coaches are skilled in helping you to actually challenge that inner chit chat, really, or the assumptions that you're making, or the stories that you're saying out loud every day as well, without you even realizing it. You might say things like, well, I'm not experienced enough to do that, or I have no time, or this is really hard. It's really hard to make money. Money doesn't grow on trees. All of these sorts of things that mean that our brain believes that. And through that belief, it's like an internal navigation system that affects our behavior. Therefore, how we behave, how we show up or we don't, and the actions that we take are all dictated by these. They're actually neural patterns and they're habits. So when people think about, build some really productive habits or stop doing things that are not productive, beliefs, thoughts, we always think about habits being things that you do.
Things that
you do are things that you think, things that you feel, things that you believe. And if those beliefs are not serving you well, you get to choose, because your brain's a master storyteller. You get to be the author of your new story and scripts. So an exercise I like to do to help women and men show up unapologetically as themselves, unlock that invincibility within them, is to look at the list of things that, am I consciously saying stuff that is holding me back and is limiting me? And what do I want to change? And then instead, craft a lot of beliefs that start with I am.
Yeah.
So I am capable. I am enough. I am a rock star. All of those sorts of things. And practice those instead. Tell yourself those, because your brain's going to believe it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do say, and I know, having done, we talk about, having done the inner work, don't we? And we've both had to work on that to get to where we are. And neither of us are saying, oh, I'm perfect and I'm fixed and it's all wonderful. But what we do now is have a level of awareness, don't we, about our own beliefs and our own stories. And that's the journey that you and I have each been on independently. But I know, and I realized that the reason that I kind of love to stand on a stage and, and talk and whatever, is that I know much earlier on in my life, I didn't feel heard. And that's where it comes from. And it's not so much, a conscious story that I was telling myself, but I know I didn't feel heard. And so I think the reason why it's like, I'm on a stage and I want to, and I write, obviously, I've published numerous books and whatever, is that is me like stepping up and using my voice and being heard, because I spent those early years, and then obviously it unfolded into the rest of my life, of not feeling like I was heard. And that's the thing. And so one of the stories that I was telling myself in my head is that, you know, I'm not heard, nobody's listening, nobody understands. And so that was then for me fueling all sorts of kinds of behaviors, all sorts of stories that I had going on. But for now, it's like, okay, like, brilliant, I've got this voice. I'm now really confident. I'm unapologetically have got this voice, and I'm now writing stuff and standing on stages and doing that stuff. And I'm now, whereas when I was younger, I think doing it because I wanted to be seen and I wanted to be heard. But now I'm doing it because I stand there kind of in my power and knowing who I am, like you say, being unapologetically myself. And it's a different kind of voice and it's a different kind of energy than it used to have.
I love that. But I also want to pick up on something. And it was exactly that that you said about these things that we unconsciously sometimes carry with us. That a statement, you said something like, nobody like hears me. That whole nobody. And so it could be the, I always get everything wrong. Or, you know, so these statements as well, this is where a coach can really help you, because I listen to this stuff all the time.
You hear it.
And you hear it. And sometimes I don't hear it in myself, you know, myself saying it, which is why I also have a coach to like to challenge me around, that's a limitation that you're putting in your way, you know, nobody.
It wasn't nobody. It was within my own family, and that my family are great and lovely and good, but I had a sense that I'm an empath, and I had a level of emotional sensitivity that, you know, not saying that my family aren't loving and caring, but I felt my emotions, I now realize, way, way deeper, and had a need to talk about and articulate those emotions. But what I got a lot of was, look, you're too sensitive. You're too sensitive. So I was always like, dialing that down. Like you say, that then becomes the, I'm not good enough, I don't fit in, you know, da, 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 da. So you're right. You know, for me, it was like, nobody listens, but it wasn't that. It was like my mum and dad, my sister, really.
Sometimes said, yeah. Oh, and I used to get that too. And I think a lot of women will relate to this, men as well, but a lot of women will relate to this, like at school, all my school reports, over emotional and oversensitive. Like from being in the infant school, like primary school. And of course that was read, the reports were read to me. And so therefore you start believing that is a bad thing, right? Yeah. So then you start trying to behave in ways that doesn't feel like you. You start to mask.
Yeah,
massively. And that's really, really difficult. You start to mask when actually, you know, being empathetic and having sensitivity, because you're really tuned into human beings, other human beings, is an incredible, invincible quality.
Yeah.
If the world had more of that, especially in workplaces too, in leadership positions, my goodness, what a different world we would live in. Probably, absolutely. For me, I'll go as far as say, more harmonious, less war and trouble in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I see it now. I see it as my superpower. And, you know, and I talk about my emotions as a piano keyboard.
Ooh.
You know, and like, you know, I just think a lot of people, and dare I say it, you know, and a lot of that is because of the way that society sort of perceives it, and the way that we raise boys versus girls. And I think it is getting better, but I think boys in particular have kind of mad, sad and glad, that for me is a little bit like playing chopsticks. You know, it's the same sort of few notes. You know, it's the emotional equivalent of chopsticks. And so, you know, that's kind of what a lot of people, you know, play. And whereas for me, I see that I have got the ability to play up and down that keyboard, in the sense that I recognize and I have a whole range of emotions. I can recognize them. I can name those emotions. You know, I can use them. I can dial them up and dial them down. For me, that's a superpower. And it's one that I absolutely didn't realize I had until really even relatively recently, even in the workplace, because I had that thing where, you know, I'd be dealing with leaders, and I'd say particularly, you know, a lot of male environments. And I would be there kind of articulating these emotions and talking about how employees felt, and usually felt fairly unhappy. And they just didn't get it.
Where's the data, Carolyn?
Yeah, where's the data?
Data?
See it, yeah. You know? And I think that's the thing. And it's, you know, and you're right. It's interesting, isn't it? Because now you think about like those school reports, don't you, in terms of like over emotional, oversensitive. Gosh, there would have been so much a better way of conveying that to you, but in a way that went, you know, here's a really positive thing about those emotions, you know, the fact that Jo gets really emotional or the fact that she's really sensitive, you know, there would have been a, there is a way, isn't there, that the, a teacher could have described that to you to go, this is your thing, use this to your advantage.
Exactly that. And ironically, the counter to that was, what a lovely girl Jo is, you know, gets on well with all the classmates, quite popular in that sense. However, what did I take from that? I didn't take those bits.
No.
The bit that, because it was focused on a lot, over-emotional and oversensitive. And therefore, during my life, feeling it was bad and trying to suppress emotions, I need to control my emotions. I hate that thing. I hate the thing about controlling emotions. Emotions are reactions to events that we experience, from, you know, joy and happiness through to sadness, withdrawal, anger, frustration. And it's not great to suppress that stuff. It's what makes us feel, it's healthy. You know, our tears, some of our tears, like, contain, depending on the type of emotion that we are feeling, will contain stress hormones. That is great. If you are feeling sad and stressed and you cry, you know, there's a reason why I say cry it out. Because what you're actually doing is secreting the stress hormones, cortisol, from your body. That is what we're supposed to do as humans, and yet we get told, oh, emotional, you know, too emotional, don't cry. And God help you if you're a boy. Big boys don't cry.
Oh yeah. And it's it is very much that thing. And it's interesting you say that, actually, in terms of, you know, because absolutely there is different types of crying, isn't there? And you know, when my world caved in the middle of 2018, and I got to an extremely dark place at that time, and I spent a year from that crying every day. Over a year. And I cried every day. And of course, at the start of that, it was those big, you know, body racking sobs because of, you know, the relationship I'd lost, the job I'd lost, the family I'd lost, you know, my home, you know, the absolute desperate, you know, kind of crying. And like you say, you know, all of that stuff coming out, not least because the relationship I'd been in had been abusive. So it was also letting out that I would, you know, I've been walking on eggshells in terms of that abusive environment for a couple of years. So all of that, you know, needed to come out. But actually, over time, and again, some days it would just be that, you know, the tears would sort of prickle at the back of your eyes, you know, not necessarily, but actually over time, those tears turned to tears of joy. And actually pride in, I survived this, I'm moving forward, I'm rebuilding my life, you know, and all the little milestones that like came with that. And so actually in the end, I kind of used to welcome my tears like every day, because they tended to be a bit of a, I've done this, you know, kind of thing, living then on my own for the first time, and, you know, and all of that stuff. And so for me, they were, again, just that bit of relief of that, you know, all of that pent up kind of anxiety and pain, but then actually the joy that that transitioned into.
Yeah. And that resilience that you've built by going through that, that means, you know, also, I think what we don't recognize or acknowledge enough are those accomplishments, however small they are too, you know, as well as the big things, because that helps build our resilience. And each time we come up against an obstacle, a hurdle to overcome, to navigate, we can go back and remember, but actually, you know, I accomplished this thing. I am resilient. I am actually invincible. There's another side to this about coming back to, I think, the confidence paradox that we've talked about a few times actually on these on these podcasts, and the thing that, you know, we were saying right at the beginning, where you can stand on stages, you know, you can do that stuff, yet in other parts of your life you feel less confident. And I've certainly experienced that too. But there's this kind of phrase, and I kind of don't like it, but it rings true a little bit. Confidence, I think, comes a lot from practice of things. And there's that phrase about fake it till you make it. I don't quite like that, but I do like fake it till you become it, i.e. practice that thing that maybe scares you and rehearse it. So mental rehearsal is really powerful, because the more times you mentally rehearse something, actually when you come to do that in real life, so whether that is standing on a stage or it's something else, your brain already thinks, I've done this before.
Yeah.
Therefore, we'll show up more confidently.
Yeah, absolutely. And I learned that actually. In fact, I learned it around getting back into the dating game, funnily enough, which really then was about that core confidence. And the thing that I, you know, I'd learned, I went on a retreat, and one of the things that they really focused on is just go and talk to anyone.
Yeah.
You know, don't wait until the really hot guy walks into the coffee shop and then think, oh my God, I need to go and start a conversation with this man. Don't do that. Yeah. Go to the coffee shop and just talk to anyone. Mm-hmm. And that's the bit that I massively like worked on, is, you know, going and doing that. You know, it goes back to what I was saying about, you know, approaching the guy in the amazing suit and going, you look $1 million, because what I have done over a period of time is just practice going and talking to just absolutely anyone. And when I go back to, I didn't want to open the front door of my own house, you know, or be, you know, give me a stage. The bit that has moved the dial in terms of I will just talk to anyone is going and practicing, like you say, all the time, anywhere you are, find a reason to start a conversation. And actually, more than anything else, I think in our current society, not least, you know, pre-pandemic, you know, we were much more fractured as a society. We don't know our neighbours. We live away from our families. You know, that was already happening. Then the pandemic came along and we were literally cut off. Absolutely cut off from other people. The thing we crave as human beings, I think now even more so, having had all that stuff denied for, you know, a couple of years, is that human connection. And the thing is that I now, and I, again, I can't say I do it all the time, but I absolutely have that thing where I want to leave somebody better than I found them. So if you do that thing of just saying hello, like making eye contact and smiling at somebody, or, you know, the poor stressed out barista that has, like, you know, a million different orders to remember, you know, but actually just thanking them, passing the time of day, you know, saying something, talking to the person next to you in the coffee queue. The thing that that does, it honestly, it transformed my confidence, because I then thought, you know what, I can kind of just talk to anybody. And also the likelihood of me seeing this person again, unless you go to the same coffee shop at the same time every day, and so do the other people, the likelihood of you seeing that person again is probably like very minimal, if not nil, depending on, you know, depending on where you live. So actually, what have you got to lose?
Yeah,
absolutely. If you can send that person away, you know, because sometimes the things that I write in my gratitude journal of a night before I go to bed are literally like, you know, really nice man in the coffee shop who I had a chat with.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that's made a difference to my day. It brought a smile to me, like, you know, on literally on my face, but actually that inside smile. And I think that is really powerful. And if we did a bit more of that, like you say, God, the world would be a better place.
Yeah. And definitely what I love about what you said as well is, you know, the practice bits can be so micro and small. So even if you don't feel like you can just say hello to somebody or talk to a stranger, just making eye contact, like you said, start with that. How many times can I just make eye contact with people? Giving a smile. Here's the thing that's really powerful about that, as social beings that we are, as human beings, is that our brain is wired for friend or foe. So, you know, if I perceive you as my friend, i.e. we give off body cues and signals like a smile, you are not a threat to me in my life, and therefore I'll open you into my life. Whereas if I use different body language, I've got a scowl on my face. I say this a lot to leaders that I work with in organisations. You know, we rush around, don't we? A lot of the time at work, we're probably wearing our worry on our face. We're scowling and frowning to strangers or to your, you know, your colleagues that don't know you pretty well. Oh, so therefore my defense goes up because I see you as a threat. So just a smile. is incredibly powerful. There are some other things that have helped me build my confidence, actually. I don't know whether you've come across Amy Cuddy, who is a social psychologist. She's done some really, really famous work on this. But things that you can use your body to do. I'm a massive fan of using your body. There's that, and there's some work that I do with my brother, who's an actor, and we help people have more presence and feel stronger. Things that you can do with your body. So the golden thread, have you come across this? Because you've come from that world, haven't you? So even if you're just not feeling very confident, but you're sitting in a meeting, I mean, my posture's terrible, actually. And we slouch a lot, don't we? I do a lot of that. But if you were to just imagine a golden thread, and it's kind of pulling you up from the base of your spine all the way up, if you looked up into the sky, that is giving you sort of presence. Where's your golden thread? The other thing, that change in your physiology. So Amy Cuddy is very well known for some research that she did about power and influence and power and impact, taking what animals do in the animal kingdom to make themselves powerful when they come under threat. And what do? Carolyn, they make themselves look really big.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Are they, if they've got bright colors, they use those, like the tail feathers come out, don't they, in terms of the bright
colors? Exactly that. The peacocking, when you talk about that at work, don't they? Oh, you know, the peacocking that goes on. But, you know, the gorilla punches his chest and all of those sorts of things. Well, we get to do that too with our body. And she talks about the power pose. And what is the power? You know, you make yourself big. And the famous one is the Wonder Woman power pose, hands on hips. And I love that one, not least because Wonder Woman is my absolute superhero. But I've used it so many times in situations where I felt a bit small. I've needed to own my space. Particularly, I train a lot in manufacturing organizations. And you never know when you go in to a training session, meeting a group of delegates, often it's men, for the very first time, you don't know what you're going to get. And so sometimes you can feel quite intimidated. So my go-to always is to stand in my Wonder Woman pose for a few seconds, because actually what she discovered in her research was when you do that, it raises your testosterone level, and testosterone is nicknamed the confidence hormone. Now, I think some people have challenged her around that. However, it works for me, and it works for lots of my delegates too. So if you want to shine and stand out, you know, super easy tip, go and stand in the loo for 2 minutes, maybe before that interview, before that meeting, before that presentation you have to give, in a Wonder Woman pose.
Yeah.
And you change the way your body feels.
Absolutely. And I 100%, I've done that myself. You know, I'd call it like the superhero pose. And it is the shoulder, the back and down.
Yeah.
Hands are on the hip. The hips are probably thrust slightly forward, you know, and it is that thing, you know, everything sort of just curves outwards, and you feel stronger from doing it. My one that I use, which is the one that I learned, is called Walking the Tiger.
Ooh.
And this one is all about, if you walk around, and when I learned this, I used to actually go around the supermarket trying this one out, because you have aisles to walk up and down. And it's that thing of, you know, think about a tiger. I mean, it's powerful, you know, immediately think strength, power. But also, obviously, a tiger could kind of rip your bloody face off, can't it? So it's about going, but you've got a tiger that's walking alongside you, and it's on a leash. So rather than having a dog, because like a dog could be of any shape or size, a tiger has a presence. So if you walk, and you kind of only need to slightly put your hand out as if you've got it on a leash. But if you walk along as if you are walking with a tiger next to you, it's completely under control because you have it on a leash. But that power that you have alongside you, that sense of control, the sense of no one can mess with me because I have my tiger and it is fully under control. But you mess with me and the tiger comes off the leash and I let it go. But you walk with that tiger alongside you, because you imagine if you had a tiger walking alongside you, just how you feel, you wouldn't be like shuffling along alongside it in an apologetic way, would you? You'd be going, I've got an effing tiger on a leash, right?
Watch out.
So So it's like, let's do that. And it's exactly that same thing, because you walk with a presence and a confidence that you don't have if the tiger isn't there. And you could just have your imaginary tiger. You can name it if you want to name it. But you have your imaginary tiger. And then you go, and it's, and I honestly have practiced that, and then, like you, use it in terms of walking into a situation and owning that space, because it's like, I'm invincible because I've got my tiger next to me.
I love that. So I'm off to the supermarket very shortly. I will be walking my tiger. Don't know if he's called Tony or whoever, but that's what I will be doing. The final thing, actually, I wanted to share that's really helped me with my confidence is, it's kind of, you can start on the outside first. It doesn't always have to start with the inside. So when you feel good on the outside, you start to feel more confident inside. And this is one of the reasons I actually trained also as a personal style and image consultant, right? Wearing your best colours.
Yeah.
Wearing, I mean, I'm always in bright colours. That just that pop of lipstick, even if you're not a makeup fan, a pop of lipstick and wearing your best colours towards your face can make you look really glowing, even on the days where you're feeling a bit rubbish. And you'll always know when it's your best colours, because it'll be the times when somebody compliments you on something that you wear, right? And then probably as women, we go, oh, this old thing, or it was only $2.99 from wherever, because we're rubbish at that. So practice just accepting the compliment. That's really hard. I mean, it comes more natural to me now just to say, oh, thank you. I really appreciate that feedback. Thank you so much. But oh my gosh, that took years of practice, because I would always put myself down. Oh, it's dead old this. I got it in the sale. It was the cheap, you know, from the cheap and nasty shop.
Yeah. And it's really true. The reason I'm smiling is that my best friend used to say to me, oh, you are the hardest person to give a compliment to.
Yeah.
Because absolutely, a bit back to your Wonder Woman thing, my Wonder Woman thing used to be, I used to have, like, you know, the bangles on my wrist that used to deflect any compliment that came anywhere near me, which is why you need to take them from up here and deflecting the compliments and put them down on your hips and stand in the Wonder Woman pose instead. You know, and do that, because it is, and you're right, you know, the one of the things I love, and I don't know if I'll quote it right, but one of the things I love is, like, don't, you know, save your special clothes for a special occasion, because the special occasion is life. And it's so true. It's like, don't save the nice underwear for the special occasion. Don't save the nice blouse for the special occasion, because just waking up in the morning and getting to put that nice underwear on or the nice blouse is the special occasion, because it's life. And that, like, because I used to be terrible. Oh, I'm saving that for special.
The best. Special. Yeah, and again, that's something we've probably grown up with. I mean, I save nothing for best anymore. Like, you know, I will walk around in my sparkles now, deliver workshops in my sparkles, in my sequins, because actually, you're right, you only get one shot at life, really, don't you? So every day is a special day when we are lucky enough to wake up in the morning, our breath is breathing itself. That is incredibly special. So the company and guide for this episode, where we've got more tips in our broad style. If you've listened to a few of these episodes already, you will know that we are using BROADS as our acronym to give you top tips. You will find that guide in the show notes accompanying this episode.
I am woman. I am me. I am enough.
You've been listening to the Broadroom podcast. If you're our kind of broad and you'd like to take a seat in the boardroom, download our free guide full of tips. You'll find it in the show notes.